We're exploring research on white-tailed deer encountering the coronavirus on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. USDA researchers, they analyzed blood samples from close to 500 deer in neighboring states Illinois and Michigan, along with deer from New York and Pennsylvania. The Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service published its findings this month in a two-page Q&A-style format, and it led us to further questions. Let's hear yours, too. Do you worry that the coronavirus might continue to mutate if it spreads to wild animals? Do you hunt? What questions do you have about your risk of a coronavirus hybrid from deer? 800-642-1234 to join in. Kristen Bernard is a professor of veterinary virology in the Department of Pathobiological Sciences at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She is an expert on zoonotic viruses transmitted between animals and people. Kristen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
What do you make of this study?
Well, I was quite surprised, to be honest. Very, very surprised that there is evidence. Remember, it's just antibodies now. It's no evidence of the actual virus in some wild deer.
Yeah, you know, what could that mean if you do find the antibodies in this blood serum? Where could they be coming from?
Well, they definitely would have to be exposed to the virus itself or to the actual SARS coronavirus, or to a related virus to be able to develop those antibodies. But it is possible that it is a related virus and not the actual SARS coronavirus.
Yeah, and that's an important distinction because the deer did not test positive for the coronavirus, but their blood contained antibodies for the virus. Can you explain what that difference is?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's almost like a footprint in your immune system, if you want to think about it that way, where when we're exposed to any kind of a pathogen or even allergies, foreign proteins of any kind, viruses, bacteria, etc., our immune system develops antibodies to it as well as other molecules, but in particular, it's those antibodies. And they can last for a very, very long time. And that's one of the things we're looking at with the vaccines currently, is how long do the antibodies last in people that get the vaccines. So those antibodies are often protective against the pathogen, and so that when you're exposed again, the antibodies are right there in your blood ready to attack the pathogen. So in this case, it's possible that they were exposed to the particular SARS coronavirus or a related one.
Well, it's interesting that you describe it as a footprint because, you know, that's unique to each individual person. Would that be the case with these deer?
Well, the antibodies are unique in our populations. All of us usually develop slightly different ones, mm-hmm. although there are particular areas of the pathogen, in this case the virus, that are typical for all of us individuals to react to. So they actually often are very, very similar in that they bind at the same place, but then our whole repertoire of antibodies might be binding to different parts of the virus.
So
that makes sense. It's a little complicated.
No, I'm following here. Is it possible that the deer could have these antibodies without having been exposed to the virus, SARS-CoV-2?
It's possible if they were exposed to a related virus.
Okay.
And the other thing that was interesting about this particular study is they looked at serum from deer that were before the pandemic, and they didn't have the antibodies. I mean, of course, they're not the same deer, but from samples that they had stored in the freezer, they did not have any antibodies before the pandemic, which makes you think, okay, maybe they were exposed to the SARS coronavirus.
So this research is in the early stages. What more do you, as a researcher, as a scientist, need to know before drawing any conclusions about what you're seeing here?
Yeah, well, first of all, it isn't peer-reviewed yet, this particular paper. It's, I'm sure, out for review now, so I'm interested in seeing the paper once it's peer-reviewed. And there, what I want to see is, did they look at a panel of coronaviruses, not just SARS coronavirus, but perhaps those coronaviruses that infect cattle that I don't know that we have one that we've isolated that infects deer yet. I'm sure they have one. But looking at a panel of viruses, so just in this particular study, I'd like to see that. Another group at USDA, and actually maybe some of the same investigators, did do an experimental infection in deer and that is published. And so there they actually exposed some young deer to in the laboratory setting to the coronavirus, and they did get sick and they were able to transmit it. So that does also give us more evidence that this may be a true transmission of SARS coronavirus to the deer in the wild. So I'd like to then see after that, looking at other deer populations and being sure, looking at other coronaviruses to see if the deer's antibodies will bind to those other coronaviruses.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Kristen Bernard, who is a professor in the Department of Pathobiological Sciences at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, as we discuss how deer may have been exposed to the coronavirus in this new USDA study. With your questions along the way, what do you want to know about how viruses mutate, how they evolve? What about the questions you have about the potential of your pets catching a variant of the coronavirus? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Kristen, if the coronavirus is in fact circulating among white-tailed deer, are there any indications of how they might have contracted it?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest puzzles especially for me. Where would they have gotten enough exposure to a human to become infected? That seems really remote, possible, but very remote possibility in my mind. It's also possible that maybe another animal became infected that has closer contact with people, and then that particular animal transmitted to the deer. We have no idea. Those are other studies that should be ongoing as more in-field studies to determine if there are other animals that are exposed and can spread the virus amongst themselves and to other species. So that's another research area that we really need more information on.
And, you know, hunting season's so big in Wisconsin here.
Yeah, definitely.
What did the USDA say about people and, you know, with the possibility of catching the coronavirus from a wild deer?
Yeah, I think right now we are more concerned with being catching the virus from each other.
Each other.
Right. But it's always possible, as you mentioned, that there could be some mutations happening in the deer that would make this virus different than the one that we're currently circulating in the humans. But as far as catching it from eating deer meat,
like cooking and eating venison. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Then that would definitely not be an issue because the virus is killed upon cooking.
So which animals could be susceptible to the coronavirus and could be carriers? I mean, we've heard about the mink outbreak. Are there animals that are more susceptible?
Yeah, great question. Any of the animals in the mink family, which is the mustelids, so minks and ferrets, weasels, those animals appear to be more susceptible that we've noticed in the laboratory, as well as, of course, in those mink outbreaks that you mentioned in the mink farms. And then felids do seem to be more susceptible. Some of the domestic cats have become infected. It's a rare occasion, but they have been. And some of our zoo cats as well, lions and tigers, have become infected. So it appears that both the felids and the mustelids are more susceptible to the virus. Now, whether or not they'll really start a transmission cycle and, you know, have that virus forever in their population, we don't have enough evidence for that yet.
Have there been animal vaccinations, that COVID vaccinations that you've been watching?
Yes, there has been. Some of the zoo animals are becoming being vaccinated by the zoo veterinarians. In particular, they're protecting the great apes as well as those large felines, so the tigers and lions.
We're talking with UW-Madison virologist Kristen Bernard, helping us unpack research from the USDA on blood specimens collected from white-tailed deer in multiple states having a coronavirus antibodies. What do you want to know about how viruses can pass back and forth between humans and animals? What questions do you have about how viruses mutate, how they evolve? Join in any point here, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. A new USDA study out has found one-third of deer tested in their hundreds of samples had coronavirus antibodies. We're discussing implications with a zoonotic disease researcher who was not involved in this study here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The researchers used blood samples from white-tailed deer in multiple states before and after the pandemic started, revealing exposure to the virus in an animal population. Do you hunt? Do you worry that the coronavirus might continue to mutate if it spreads to wild animals? 800-642-1234. Kristen Bernard from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine studies vector-borne illnesses and with us for about nine more minutes. Let's take a call now. Taran is joining us from TOMA. Hi, Taran.
Hi. So I have a concern with a petting zoo in the Wisconsin Dells. You know what? This zoo, they have a lot of white-tailed deer, and they also have some goats and rams that families can come and pay to feed and pet and play with. So I'm wondering if you think that this will be a major cause for a big spreading for not only Wisconsinites, but for a lot of out-of-state tourists that might come over.
Petting zoos, Kristen.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think at this point in time, we really don't have any idea if those animals can spread it to people. And I think our biggest risk still is human-to-human transmission. So I don't find that it, in especially outside in the environment, as long as the people, I would recommend everybody wearing masks if you're in close contact, even outside. And as long as people wash their hands afterwards, and usually those petting zoo type environments have really good hand washing sinks. Mm-hmm. And that would be the most important thing. Now, going forward in the future, if we find more research that other animals can become infected and we start to control it in our own human population, then we might have more concern.
Let's bring in Andrew now in Palmyra. Andrew, hi, go ahead.
Hi there. I just had a quick question about how viruses that occur generally in one species could be transmitted to another. It seems odd to me to have that jump from one to another because, for instance, dogs, they get certain shots, they take certain medications like, heartworm chews and things like that the humans don't have to take. So I'm just wondering, is that transmission, is that something that would occur naturally, or does that take some manipulating behind the scenes for that to occur?
Andrew, thank you. On the spillover effect, Kristen.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Actually, it depends on the pathogen, and my students hate it when I say it depends. but a lot of pathogens will transmit between humans and animals and back and forth. Many, many, many do that. And it depends on whether or not the virus has really, and I'm going to talk about viruses now, whether or not the virus really has specific interactions with a protein or other components of a person's cell that only humans have. And then they will not be able to infect animals well, or vice versa. But there are a lot of viruses. Influenza virus is a classic one that we know can infect birds and pigs and people, and they go back and forth all the time, and we have lots of evidence for that. So that's a natural transmission. And we've seen this before with coronaviruses. And in fact, the very first SARS we know came from an animal. We don't know exactly which one. And then the MERS coronavirus, the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus, actually is transmitted from camels to people. So we know this happens naturally, and it happens with a lot of different viruses. But you are right. There are some pathogens that are specific for specific animal species. Your dogs get it vaccinated against parvovirus, and it's a canine parvovirus. Humans can't get that, fortunately. So there, it does depend on the particular pathogen we're talking about.
I want to pick up on what you said there, because there remain different theories about where the virus originated. Some scientists continue to speculate that it could have been unleashed inadvertently through a research lab in Wuhan. And then other researchers think, as you mentioned, it had, you know, passed from a wild animal like a bat or a pangolin. What is known now about where the virus originated from?
Yeah, probably not a lot more information than what you just said, Kate. We still, I would say, vast majority of virologists believe that it was from an animal species. It's really hard to absolutely rule out that it didn't come from a laboratory. It's proving the negative. It's very difficult. And I do believe that the Chinese scientists are showing their records, and WHO went and looked at those records, and they didn't have any evidence of a scientist becoming sick and then infecting the population, which is the way I would think it could have happened if it was going to. So I would say the vast majority of us believe that it's coming from an animal species. But until we find that particular virus in an animal species, we have the relatives, the distant relatives in animal species. Until we actually find it, it's hard to be definitive.
Is that like finding a needle in a haystack? How difficult will it?
Yes, it definitely is.
I mean, because that will then help you make a definitive origin point as to trace where the virus came from?
Yes. And that would be helpful, because then we can say, oh, all right, yes, the relatives are in bats, but perhaps it was some other animal species in between. And those are the ones that we need to be more careful not to have contact with as humans.
We're talking with UW-Madison Professor Kristen Bernard, who is an expert on zoonotic viruses transmitted between animals and people, as we look at new findings out from the USDA on coronavirus antibodies found in hundreds of deer samples. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Kristen, you touched on this earlier about vaccinating animals, and we know mink farmers are vaccinating their animals against the virus. Is it possible to vaccinate wildlife?
Oh, that's a good question. There's actually one of our faculty in my department, Jorge Osorio, does quite a bit of work on developing new vaccines for wildlife. And it's obviously very difficult. Usually you're going to want to have something that an animal can eat and then become vaccinated, because you can put out baits. And in fact, especially in the Northeast, they were using baits to try to control rabies virus in raccoons. And so they would actually spread out, and I'm not sure if they're still doing it, but a good 10 years ago they were. They spread out these baits using planes and flying over the Adirondack Mountains.
How did that work out for them?
And you know raccoons, they love to eat stuff, right? So they would find the baits and eat and actually become vaccinated. But it is difficult. We thought about trying to vaccinate birds against West Nile virus. It's not an easy task. Dr. Osorio is looking at prairie dogs and vaccinating them against the plague. So there's different methods, but it is very difficult.
Quickly here, John from Boaz called in to tell us that animals like dogs can also help us by sharing good bacteria with us. Any insights there on good bacteria?
On good bacteria? Well, I mean, having a good, what we call a microbiome now, in the last 5 or 6 years, we always talk about our microbiome and having the good probiotics, et cetera. Mm. So I think being exposed to the whole bacterial field is always useful. Now, of course, most of us humans have our microbiome and it's not affected too much by other animals, but you know, it doesn't hurt to have a nice, healthy microbiome.
And as we wrap up here, what big questions do you need to understand about the coronavirus that you're really hoping to get answered pretty soon?
Let's see. I guess one question would be, which I now understand CDC is recommending putting out, having another booster shot. Mm-hmm. So I think the longevity of our immune response for the vaccine is a big question. And the other question is the longevity of the immune response after a natural infection. And why do we tend to get infected again, even after a natural exposure to SARS coronavirus?
Kristen, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Kristen Bernard is professor of veterinary virology at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She's an expert on zoonotic viruses. Coming up, we check in with the state epidemiologist for community health and pediatrician, Dr. Jasmine Zapata. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.